Hello friends, welcome to VSchool. We are on chapter 12, very, very important chapter. In the previous chapter we saw, once the proposal is made, it's not complete till the legal things are complied with. And what exactly are the legal things to be complied? What are the legal issues in mergers and acquisitions? We are going to understand in this chapter 12 on legal issues in mergers and acquisitions. This chapter will help you understand the legal issues in mergers and acquisitions. Now, before we go more further into this chapter, the very first question arises as to why legal issues in mergers and acquisitions. We need to understand this. Mergers and acquisitions are very complicated and lengthy affairs. Since the stakes are high, the merging entities are required to adhere to a number of provisions to ensure that interest of all the stakeholders is protected. When we say number of provisions, this includes the SEBI regulations, this includes certain provisions of the legislations existing in our country and various other things that are required to be complied for a merger. It can be a high court order also when the proposal is going for certain instances. Countries across the globe understand the flip side of mergers and acquisitions and therefore enforce laws to control their anti-competitive nature. Keeping in line with these global trends, the Indian economy has also evolved a very comprehensive set of laws that govern all the aspects of mergers and acquisition. The basic objective is to ensure that the process is carried out meticulously and the interest of all the stakeholder is protected. In this chapter, you will learn the concepts of appointment date and effective date, Companies Act 2013, the powers of the court, the SEBI buyback of securities regulation 1998, the SEBI substantial acquisition of shares and takeover regulation 1997, the SEBI substantial acquisition of shares and takeovers regulation 2011. Then we also will go through SEBI substantial acquisition of shares and takeovers regulations amendment 2017, the SEBI substantial acquisition of shares and takeovers regulation amendment 2018, the listing agreement norms, the SEBI delisting of securities guidelines 2003, the corporate governance issues, and the CFO CEO certification, provisions of Income Tax Act 1961, cost with reference to certain modes of acquisition, deduction of certain expenditure incurred, tax sale of business, slump sale, stamp duty aspects of mergers and acquisition, the Foreign Exchange Management Act 1999, and the Competition Act 2002. So all these things we are going to understand, which are connected with mergers and acquisitions. Now let us first start with the concept of appointed date and the effective date. The appointed date connotes the date of amalgamation, that is the date from which the undertaking, including the asset and liability of the transferor company, vests in the transferee company, whereas the effective date signifies the completion of all the formalities of merger. So this is a starting point wherein we have got the clarity on the appointed date, on the effective date. Now, the very big legislation as far as the merger and acquisition is concerned, the Companies Act 2013. The Companies Act 2013 is one of the most important legislation in India. The Companies Act is administered by the central government through the Ministry of Corporate Affairs and the Registrar of Companies, popularly known as the ROC, the Official Liquidators, the Public Trustees, the Company Law Board, the Director of Inspection, etc., etc. The Companies Act empowers the central government to regulate the formation, financing, functioning, and winding up of the companies. It also provides an elaborate mechanism for regulating the organizational, financial, managerial, and all other relevant aspects of a company. The Companies Act provisions have been designed to ensure that companies conduct their affairs in accordance with them and that no unfair practices prejudicial to the public interest are being resorted to by and the company or a group of companies. So this is very, very precise provision of the Companies Act. The Companies Act also empowers a company to examine whether there is any mismanagement which may adversely affect any interest of its stakeholders. So it considers both from the stakeholders' aspects as well as the company's aspects. Now, what are the provisions relating to mergers and amalgamations? Arrangement includes reorganization of the share capital of the company. This is done either by consolidation of shares of different classes or by the division of shares into different classes or both. Compromise is termed as an arrangement carried out at the behest of the court on an application made by the company or any creditor, member or liquidator where a company is being wound up. So this essentially has been specifically clear what an arrangement. Arrangement includes reorganization of the share capital. It is done either by consolidation of shares of different class or by division of shares. Whereas compromise is termed as an arrangement carried out on behest of the court on an application by the company or any creditor, member or liquidator where a company is being wound up. So these two concepts relating to arrangement and compromise has to be very clear. Now, every scheme of arrangement and compromise should be approved by 3/4 of the creators or members present and voting either in person or present. This is a very important legal provision relating with arrangement and compromise. A notice calling the meeting of creditors or members should clearly state the terms of arrangement and compromise and their effects. If the arrangement and compromise are likely to affect the rights of the debenture holders, a statement giving information and explanation relating to the trustees of the deed or securing the debenture capital needs is to be given. If these provisions are violated, the company and every officer of the company shall be punishable with a fine. So it's not that you have to follow, but if there is any violation, then are penal provisions also. The court may provide for certain sanctions, like the court has power to sanction a compromise or arrangement scheme proposed in connection with a scheme for reconstruction of a company or amalgamation of two or more companies. The court may provide for transfer of whole or part of a property or liability or the transferee to the transferor. Here the transferee could be the target, the transferor could be the acquirer. Allotment or apportioning the shares, debentures or other like interests among the transferor or transferee. Continuing the suit by or against the target, by or against the acquirer. Dissolution without winding up by any transferor. Dissent by any person to the scheme of the compromise or arrangement within the stipulated time and in the stipulated manner. The matters necessary to carry out the scheme in a complete and effective manner. So these are the things the court may provide. And what could be the effect of the court approval? The approval of the court is subject to the condition that a scheme is not prejudicial to the interests of the members or the public. Once the court admits the application, a stay is imposed on all the suits or proceedings against the company. Once the scheme is approved, the changes will take place. All the property and liability shall stand transferred to the transferee company. Now, what is the effect? Another effect, all the court property that was under any charge should be deemed to be free from the said charge. Once an order to that effect is passed, the order should accordingly be incorporated in the records of the company. Once the order is passed, the company should file a certified copy of the order with the ROC, failing which every officer who is at default shall be punishable with a fine. The court should communicate the details of all the notices of the compromise and the arrangement to the central government. It should then seek and consider the representation made by central government before passing any order. So this is a specific provision relating with the effect of the court approval. Now, when will the reconstruction or amalgamation void? It can be void under certain provisions like the Memorandum of Articles of Association, resolution passed in the general body meeting or by the board of directors, an agreement between the company and any other person. So under these provisions, the reconstruction or amalgamation could be void. What are the powers of the court? The court enjoys immense powers with regard to sanctioning amalgamation schemes proposed by the companies. The court can use these powers and make provisions in the order in the following matters. Number one, transfer of the whole or any of the undertaking, property or liabilities of any target to the acquirer, allotment or appropriation of any shares, debentures or others like interest in that company by the acquirer under the compromise of arrangement, any legal proceedings pending by or against each other, dissolution of the acquirer's company without winding up or arrangement provided such dissent has been filed within the stipulated time and in the manner prescribed, any other issue necessary to ensure the reconstruction or amalgamation is carried out fully and effectively. The court can also sanction the scheme with retrospective effect. However, before passing any order, the court should consider the report of the ROC and the official liquidator prior to sanctioning the scheme of amalgamation or reconstruction, which should state that the affairs of the company are being conducted in a manner that is not prejudicial to the interests of the members of the public in general. Now, let us look at certain regulations. First, the SEBI regulations. First, SEBI on Buyback of Securities Regulations 1998. The SEBI Buyback of Securities Regulation 1998 are applicable to companies wanting to buy back shares or other specified securities listed at the stock exchange. The Act says that a buyback cannot be done for delisting shares from the stock exchange. SEBI has issued instructions for listed companies regarding the buyback. What is the concept of buyback? Now, when we talk about SEBI regulation, we also need to understand the concept of buyback. Buyback is a mechanism of financial restructuring through which a company purchases its own shares or other specified securities. The company offers to take back its shares owned by the investors at a specified price generally determined or arrived at on the basis of average market price of the shares in the past few months. The value is determined by adding a certain amount as premium so that more shareholders are attracted to offer their holdings under the proposed buyback scheme. The Companies Act prohibits a limited company from buying back its own shares. The only way a company could attempt a buyback was through compliance with the provision of an adherence to the procedure for reduction of share capital as specified in the Companies Act. This involves confirmation by the court. The company must file a declaration of solvency with the ROC and SEBI in the prescribed form before the buyback is carried out. Now, why do companies opt for a buyback? Number one reason, to increase the promoter's holding, to increase the earnings as per share, to improve return on capital, return on net worth, and shareholders' value, to provide an additional exit route to shareholders in conditions where the shares are undervalued or are thinly traded, to enhance the consolidation of stake in the company, to utilize the surplus cash to the shareholders through buyback, to have an optimum capital structure, to rationalize the capital structure by writing off capital not represented by the assets, to support the share value with the capital market by reducing the floating capital, to thwart a hostile takeover attempt, to pay the surplus cash not required by business. What are the sources of buyback? There can be three specific sources of buyback. Number one, the free reserves. Number two, the share premium account. And number three, proceeds of any shares or other specified securities. What is the prerequisite of a valid buyback? It should be authorized under the Articles of Association. Number two, the company should pass a special resolution in its general meeting authorizing the buyback. A buyback proposal should be approved by the board of directors by means of a board resolution passed at its meeting. And the amount intended to be bought back should not exceed 10% of the total paid up equity capital and free reserves of the company. So these are the prerequisites of a valid buyback. There are some more. In addition to this, the company is also required to pass a special resolution in its general meeting as per the procedure laid down. the overall limit for any buyback of securities that may be resorted to by a company should not exceed 25% of the company's paid-up capital on free reserves. The buyback equity ratio should be within the permissible 2:1 range. The shares intended to be bought back must be fully paid up. Every buyback is required to be completed within 12 months from the date of passing the specific resolution, the date of passing the board resolution, or the date of declaration of the results of the postal ballot where the resolution is passed to postal ballot. Once the process of buyback is completed, a company is required to physically extinguish and destroy the securities within 7 days from the last day on which the buyback process is completed. A company that has completed a buyback of shares cannot make a further issue of shares within a period of 6 months from the date of completion of the buyback process. Once the buyback process is completed, the company should file a return with SEBI and the ROC in the prescribed format within a period of 30 days. The notice should be accompanied by an explanatory note. The notice of the meeting containing the special resolution relating to buyback of shares should be accompanied by an explanatory statement that should clearly address certain issues and facts, the necessity for buyback, the class of security needed to be purchased by the buyback, the amount to be invested in under the buyback, the time limit for completion of the buyback. And there can be two main modes of buyback, like existing security holders on a proportionate basis, the open market through the book building process or the stock exchange. In odd lot, where the shares are of a listed companies are smaller than the market lot, in where securities issued to be employees of the company under stock options. So these are the three main modes, like existing security holders in odd lots and when securities are issued to the employees. Likewise, there are certain prohibited modes of buyback. When it is prohibited through a subsidiary company, including its own subsidiary company, through an investment company or a group of investment company, if the company has defaulted in respect of repayment of deposits or interest payable thereon, redemption of debentures or preference shares, that is payment of dividend to any shareholder or repayment of any term loan or interest payable thereon to any financial institution or bank, and through negotiated deals, not spot transactions, private arrangements, and insider dealings. Now let's look at other provisions that need to be monitored by a company planning buyback of shares. Number one, the offer price should have a floor price. If the related securities are infrequently traded, the offer price shall be determined as per the SEBI Substantial Acquisition and Takeover Regulations. The entire process needs to be carried out transparently. The stock exchanges are required to monitor the possibility of price manipulation. The amount of consideration for the tendered and accepted security shall be settled on in cash. Now, what can be the advantages of buyback of shares? Number one, low market price. Number two, boost to the share price. Number three, utilizing excess cash. Number four, influence the employee stock option program and safeguard from the hostile takeover bid. So these are the different advantages of buyback of shares. Likewise, there are disadvantages also of buyback of shares, like enhancing promoters holding rather than shareholders' wealth, thus making them promoters more powerful. Delisting of companies, if the promoters are able to get more than 50% shares, delisting may happen. No restriction on the number of buybacks. Repeated buybacks can increase promoters' equity holdings. Insider trading, it benefits people involved in insider trading. So this can be the disadvantages of buyback of shares. Now let's look at another regulation of SEBI, which is SEBI Substantial Acquisition of Shares and Takeover Regulations 1997. The SEBI Substantial Acquisition of Shares and Takeover Regulation 1997 lays down the procedures to be followed by an acquirer for acquiring the majority of shares or controlling in another company. This has been repealed by the SEBI Substantial Acquisition of Shares and Takeover Regulation 2011. So this clearly establishes the fact that the SEBI brings out upgraded, revised regulations on various matters that relates with companies. Now, in this, we have a concept of substantial acquisition of shares. Takeover is a process whereby an acquirer takes control of the target company. However, when an acquirer acquires substantial quantity of shares or voting rights of the target company, it is termed as a substantial acquisition of shares. Persons acting in concert, popularly known as the PAGs, are individuals, companies, any other legal entities who act together with the objective of acquiring substantial shares or voting rights in the target company and gaining control over the target company. The PAG may enter into a formal or informal agreement in this regard. Now, what is the procedure for substantial acquisition of shares? Number one, making a public announcement. In the newspapers, disclosing the intention to acquire shares of the target company from the existing shareholders by means of an open offer. Number two, issuing a letter of offer to the shareholders of the target company containing certain information. Number three, determining the offer price. Acquirer may seek the application of the merchant banker. Number four, determining duration of the offer. Offer remains open for 30 days. Number five, discharging dues of shareholders within 30 days from the closure of the offer. Now, the announcement should carry special disclosures like the offer price, the number of shares to be acquired from the public, the identity of the acquirer, the purpose of acquisition, the future plans of the acquirer, if any, regarding the target company. So these are the special disclosures which should be a part of the announcement. It should also have change in control over the target company, procedures to be followed by the acquirer in accepting the shares, standard by the shareholders, a period within which all the formalities pertaining to the offer should be completed. Now, what information should be there in the letter of offer? It should be having disclosures of the acquirers or persons acting in concert, the target company, the financials of the acquirer, the offer price, the justification of the offer price, the number of shares to be acquired from the public. So this is the information that is required in the letter of offer. Some more information that should be included in the letter of offer is purpose of acquisition, the future plans of the acquirer, if any, regarding the target company, change in control of the target company, the procedure to be followed by the acquirer in accepting shares, standard by the shareholders, the period within which all the formalities to the offer would be completed. Now let's look at the SEBI Substantial Acquisition of Shares and Takeover Regulations 2011. The Takeover Code of 2011 adheres to the framework and principles of the Takeover Code of 1997, but the changes it brings about are significant. Next, we move on to the SEBI Substantial Acquisition of Shares and Takeover Amendments Regulation 2017. The Securities and Exchange Board of India notified the Securities and Exchange Board of India Substantial Acquisition of Shares and Takeovers Amendment Regulation 2017 to amend the Securities and Exchange Board of India Substantial Acquisition of Shares and Takeover Regulations 2011. So 27 is an amendment over 2011 regulation. What does it say? There were several further changes in the amendment of 2018, that is subsequent to 2017. These regulations are further amended by the SEBI, and this latest amendment comes in 2023. So this has been regularly and timely changed, and the latest also comes in 2023. Students can view the amendments from the SEBI website. So students should definitely make it a point. SEBI website, you just search and you get all the circulars listed in a chronological order, and that's how you can keep on updating, come to the latest what circular has been issued on a particular topic. Now let us look at the listing agreement norms. The listing is the process whereby securities are admitted to the trading privileges of a recognized stock exchange. The securities may be of any public limited company, central or state government, quasi government, and other financial institutions, corporations, municipalities, etc. The listing is done in accordance with the provisions of Securities Contract Regulation Act, Securities Contract Regulation Rules 1957, Companies Act, guidelines issued by SEBI, and rules, bylaws, and regulations of the concerned exchange. The listing guidelines require companies to fulfill various formalities and adhere to disclosure requirements. Companies to fulfill various formalities and disclosure requirements in case of a public issue, that may be an initial public offering or a further public offering. It can be a preferential issue. It can be issue of Indian depository receipts. It can be amalgamation, that implies mergers, acquisition, and reconstruction of companies. It can going ahead with qualified institutional investors, popularly known as the QIPs. What is the objective of listing? Number one, to provide liquidity to securities, to mobilize savings or economic development, to protect the interests of investors and ensuring full disclosure by the listed entities, to provide the mechanism for effective management of trading in securities, and to provide cost-effective access to the capital. These are the various objectives of listing, which are beneficial for the investors as well as for the company. Now, what are the guidelines for listing in India? India has two very active stock exchanges, the Bombay Stock Exchange and the National Stock Exchange. The two exchanges allow companies to get listed on their respective bourses to enjoy the trading privileges subject to fulfilling certain norms. What are the listing requirements for companies to IPO and FPO? The basic categorize companies into two. One, large cap. Second is the small cap. Who are the large cap and small cap? Large cap companies are those that enter the market with a minimum issue size of rupees 100 million and market capitalization of not less than rupees 250 million. All other companies are treated as small cap companies according to the listing norms. Large cap company have to fulfill certain requirements. Number one, the minimum post issue paid of capital of the company shall be rupees 30 million. A minimum issue size shall be rupees 100 million. A minimum market capitalization of the company shall be rupees 250 million. Market capitalization is the total value of paid up post issue paid up capital, a paid up number of equity shares multiplied with the issue price. The small cap companies has to fulfill certain requirements. What are they? The minimum post-issue paid of capital of the company shall be rupees 30 million. The minimum issue size shall be rupees 30 million. The minimum market capitalization of the company shall be rupees 50 million. So these are specific requirements to be followed by the large cap and the small cap based on the regulations or the provisions made by the exchange. Small cap company has to fulfill certain more requirements, like minimum income or turnover of the company shall be rupees 30 million in each of the preceding 3 to 12 months period. A minimum number of public shareholders after the issue shall be 1,000. A due diligence study needs to be conducted by an independent team of chartered accountants or merchant bankers appointed by the Bombay Stock Exchange. Companies that offer the shares through public issue and deciding to list the same should have prior permission from the BSE. So permission to use name of BSE in company's prospectus is essential. So this permission related to use of their name in a company's prospectus or offer for sale or document before filing a copy with the same with the ROC. So this has to be noted very carefully. The company's application seeking permission to use the name of BSE in its prospectus is placed before the listing committee of the BSE, which evaluates the application based on the promoter's background, company, project, company's financial risk factors, and other aspects, and once satisfied with the finding, grants permission to the company. Now, there is also permission for trading. SEBI guidance clearly states that the company issuing securities should complete the requirements for trading at all stock exchanges where the securities are to be listed. It needs to be done within 7 working days of the finalization on the basis of allotment. There is a requirement of 1% security also. The listing provision states that a company is making public rights issue should deposit 1% of the issue amount as security deposit with a designated stock exchange before the issue opens up for subscription. The amount is kept as security until the allotment process is completed. If the company fails to resolve the complaints of investors regarding the delay in sending refund orders or the share certificates or the non-payment of commission to underwriters, brokers, etc., the security amount shall be forfeited.